Good evening. This is Griffin Bancroft of CBS Radio News, recording in Washington. There was a change of procedure in the McCarthy Army hearings today. Senator McCarthy had been on a weekend speaking tour and sent word he would be late. So the committee temporarily put him aside and went on with the next witness, McCarthy's staff director, Francis P. Carr. Real progress was made. Carr has been described as the silent man in the case, and compared with some others, he was a relatively silent witness. There were no speeches. Bluntly, he swore to all the charges made against the Army, and with equal bluntness, he denied the Army's countercharges. The morning session was devoted to his direct and cross-examination by Assistant Committee Counsel Thomas B. Pruitt, filling in for Counsel Ray Jenkins. During the afternoon, senators and other counsel took their 10-minute turns. All went smoothly until the day ended with another blow-up of the smoldering feud between McCarthy and Democratic Senator Symington of Missouri. And here to tell you about it is my colleague, Bill Costello.
Attorney Pruitt, on direct examination, led Frank Carr through a series of questions, enabling him to put the McCarthy side of the case in the record. On the subject of countercharges that the Army had tried to stop McCarthy's investigations, Pruitt asked Carr to give specific instances of Army efforts to call off the inquiry.
Now, Mr. Carr, I think at this point it will be well to state briefly the charges or specifications as contained in the document which Senator McCarthy filed on your behalf and on Mr. Combs' behalf.
All right, sir.
I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Right, sir.
And correct me if I'm wrong when I state that, in substance, Senator McCarthy, you and Mr. Combs have charged or specified that Mr. Stevens and Mr. Adams sought to halt your investigation of the Army, that those two gentlemen sought to hold Private Shine as a, quote, hostage, end quote, and that Mr. Stevens and Mr. Adams sought to, quote, blackmail Senator McCarthy and the members of his staff with threats that an unfavorable report would be issued if the loyalty board subpoenas were not called off. Now, is that in substance the specification that's contained in your document?
That's the substance of our statement, yes, sir.
Now, with reference to that, and I ask you for the sake of clarity to confine your testimony to those specifications or charges, I will ask you, when was the first occasion on which either Mr. Stevens or Mr. Adams sought to stop your investigation of the Army, which is within your knowledge?
Right. The first occasion, to my knowledge, was a suggestion by Mr. Adams on or about October 8th in New York City in room 1402 of the courthouse. Mr. Adams was present while we were interviewing witnesses concerning Fort Monmouth. He listened to much of the testimony or the statements taken. He said that the Army had most or all of this information and that they would be able to handle the situation at Fort Monmouth themselves. He suggested that there was no need to continue beyond that week and that there was no need for any hearings.
What was your reaction to that?
Well, frankly, sir, I thought it was a good try by Mr. Adams, and I didn't blame him for suggesting that. I saw nothing improper. I thought it was a good try.
You don't attribute anything in the way of an improper motive to that conversation?
No, sir, I don't.
And when was the next attempt, if any, on the part of either Mr. Stevens or Mr. Adams to halt your investigation?
Well, the next, to my knowledge, was on either the 13th or the 14th of October. We were lunching with Mr. Stevens at the Merchants Club in New York City, about a block or two from the courthouse where we were holding hearings on Fort Monmouth. The secretary and Mr. Adams both, at that time, were doing what I thought was exploring and feeling out the chairman to see if they couldn't put across the idea that there should not be any continuance of the executive hearings and no future hearings. They made it very clear that they did not think that there was any necessity for future hearings. They made it clear that they had most, if not all, of the information, that if the committee would give them what information they had, the committee had, with the information they, the Army, had, they would be able to clean up the situation. I recall that Senator McCarthy didn't buy this. Later, he told me that the main reason he didn't buy it was because the Army had had this information to his knowledge for a long period of time and that they had not done anything about it.
Mr. Carr, like his predecessors in the witness chair, was asked about the now famous picture taken November 17th at McGuire Air Force Base, the key question, of course, being who had asked that Secretary Stevens and Private Shine be photographed together. Mr. Carr's version of the incident began this way.
On the 17th, there was an arrangement made that the senator and his staff would go to Fort Monmouth and then proceed to Boston in the secretary's plane. I recall that when we arrived at Fort Monmouth, I recall that when we arrived at, actually it was McGuire Air Force Base adjacent to Fort Dix. When we arrived and were getting off the plane, I heard the secretary say something to the effect of, now would be a good time to get that picture with Dave. There was a general round of handshakes and introductions. Mr. Shine was there, General Ryan was there, two colonels, I believe, one is Colonel Bradley and one was Colonel Lavelle. There were some other officers, there were some men there, there were photographers there. After the introductions, I recall the secretary motioned to Shine. I didn't hear him say anything, but they came and stood together against the plane. The photographers made ready to take pictures. I recall that I tried to get out of the picture. I saw it was coming. I tried to get out of the picture. I recall that Colonel Bradley was standing in the area. That's about all that happened there. I do recall that that evening at the when we were dining at one of the officers' quarters, Senator McCarthy told Mr. Shine in front of the two colonels, Colonel Bradley and Colonel Lavelle, that he wanted him to spend all of his free time when he was not in training working on the committee reports. That's about all of that conversation.
You've stated the substance of the events of November 17.
As I recall, sir.
Another familiar aspect of the case came up late in the morning session, whether Roy Cohn was unreasonable about Shine's assignment or whether he was being baited by Army officials. On cross-examination, Attorney Pruitt brought the subject up with this question.
And you stated at length here the efforts or baiting tactics on the part of Mr. Adams, holding up small favors or tidbits in order to gain a termination of your investigation. You recall your testimony
yes.
in that regard.
Yes.
Now, what effect would it have on Mr. Cohn, this baiting that Mr. Adams used? And I'll address myself particularly to the instance of January 14th.
Mr. Cohn, the effect it had on Mr. Cohn was that it annoyed him. Mr. Cohn felt very strongly that since he was responsible in some measure for bringing Mr. Shine with the subcommittee, that Mr. Shine should not be discriminated against by the Army. He should not be used by the Army. An example of what Mr. Cohn apparently had in mind was the fact that that Mr. Adams brought up this business of shipping him overseas before he had finished his training. Another example I might think of is this publicized statement by a general in the army that he would give $100 to anyone who would poke Shine in the nose. That type of thing. Mr. Cohn felt that Shine should not be discriminated against because he had worked with the committee.
Now, was this a sensitive subject with Mr. Cohn?
What do you mean, sensitive?
On the question of Shine.
When
Mr. Adams baited him, as you have stated.
No, I wouldn't say it was a sensitive subject with Mr. Cohn. Mr. Adams baited him. Mr. Cohn, for a long time, took a good deal of baiting. Once in a while, it would get under his skin, as it would anyone else.
I want to refer you to Mr. Adams' testimony on page 2606 of the record. That relates to the conversation of January 14. Do you have it, Mr. Cohn? And I'll read from Mr. Adams' testimony. Mr. Adams, yes, sir, that is right. I asked him what would happen if Shine got overseas duty. He responded with vigor and force, quote, Stevens is through as Secretary of the Army. I said, quote, O'Roy, something to this effect. O'Roy, don't say that. Come on, really, what is going to happen if Shine gets overseas duty? He responded with even more force. Quote, we will wreck the Army. Now, is the statement which I've just read attributable to Mr. Cohn correct?
No, sir. I was there in the room after Mr. Adams had mentioned this shipping of Shine overseas. Mr. Cohn did not make these statements.
There's no question but what that question was brought up. Mr. Adams asked Mr. Cohn what would happen if Shine were sent overseas.
I don't recall him saying what would happen if Mr. Shine were sent overseas. I recall he said something about, I'll cooperate with you fellas a little bit now. How would you like it if I sent Adams overseas? Something to that effect. I sent Shine overseas.
And it is your testimony that Mr. Cohn did not make any response in substance, quote, we will wreck the Army.
That's correct. That's correct.
Very well. I'll read further from Mr. Adams' testimony on page 2607. Then he said, quote, the first thing we are going to do is get General Ryan for the way he has treated Dave at Fort Dix. Dave gets through at Fort Dix tomorrow or this week, and as soon as he is gone, we are going to get General Ryan for the obscene way in which he has permitted Shine to be treated up there. He said, quote, we are not going to do it ourselves. We have another committee of the Congress interested in it. Then he said, I wouldn't put it past you to do this. We will start investigations. We have enough stuff on the Army to keep investigations going indefinitely. And if anything like such double cross occurs, that is what we will do. Now, did you follow me as I read, Mr. Carr?
Yes, pretty much, sir.
Did Mr. Cohn make any such statement or the substance
No, sir, he didn't. I'm sure that I would have recalled it if he had said anything concerning General Ryan.
With the opening of the afternoon session, subcommittee members took up the cross-examination. Republican Senator Potter of Michigan asked about another well-publicized episode, the New York ride in which John Adams claimed he was put out by Roy Cohn in the middle of Park Avenue. Senator Potter asked Mr. Carr to give his version of the conversation.
Mr. Carr, you heard Mr. Adams testify concerning what took place, that famous automobile ride from in New York from the courthouse to the hotel when Mr. Adams missed his train, he claims, three times. Now, I believe you testified this morning that the discussion during that automobile ride with Mr. Cohn, I believe, was the driver. Mr. Adams testified that it was quite an animated conversation. Do you agree with that it was quite animated?
Oh, yes, sir.
But you, it's your testimony that the discussion during that automobile trip concerned General Law. Is that correct?
It did, sir.
Was David Shine mentioned during the course of that conversation?
As I said this morning, his name was mentioned in the at the luncheon when Mr. Adams said, "Let's talk about Shine." It's my recollection that his name was not mentioned at any point during the automobile ride.
During when Mr. Adams testified, he intimated that there was a certain amount of friction between Mr. Cohn and Senator McCarthy at the same time. And he stated that after he had returned and talked with you about this automobile ride, when Mr. Adams stated that he was left off in the middle of the street and had to catch a cab and get to the depot in a hurry to catch his train, you stated that you should have seen what happened with Senator McCarthy. And I'd like to quote to you from the testimony of Mr. Adams on that, so I'll be quoting correctly. This is Mr. Adams stating. Mr. Carr told me, this is on page 2592. Mr. Carr told me a few days later that he didn't think that I should feel badly about the way I was put out of the car, because he said I should have been there to see the way Senator McCarthy left the car a few blocks later. Now, did you say that, Mr. Carr?
No, sir.
Did you say anything in substance that would give Mr. Adams any reason to make that statement under oath?
No, sir, I didn't. I can see no reason why I would have said it, since Senator McCarthy and Mr. Cohn appeared to be in agreement about the subject of possible reprisals against persons who had helped the committee.
And you heard Mr. Adams state that the main source main subject of conversation was Mr. Shine, and you say that's not so. It was General Law.
He's mistaken, yes.
I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
In mid-afternoon, Democratic Senator Jackson got around to asking Mr. Carr what he meant precisely in accusing the Army of blackmail in a staff memo that he prepared last December 9th. Senator Jackson inquired,
"Do I understand that you did not intend to use the word blackmail in the usual sense of that word?"
"I intended to use the word blackmail, yes, sir. I don't qualify it very much. I just tell you that at sometimes I use words loosely, and to me, I was thinking at this point blackmail in one sense of its meaning. I think that the dictionary will show that one meaning of blackmail is to extort, and that's what I was thinking of."
"Well, and to extort is a crime."
I consider it to extort a crime, yes, sir.
"So it was blackmail in a lawyer's sense of the term."
"Well, I wasn't using it in a lawyer's sense. I was using it in a free sense, in the sense in which this memorandum was written."
"Well, we're using it in an FBI sense, not your training."
I don't know that I was. However, I will tell you that I thought it was, this was an extremely serious business, yes.
"So that on December 9th, the situation was serious?"
"It was to me, yes.
As far as you were concerned, well, this is your memorandum, and you were stating or giving your own state of mind."
"That's right."
"On that date. You recall the testimony in the hearings that there was a feeling that the thing, this controversy with the Army didn't get serious until January 21st.
"That's correct, I recall."
You don't agree with that according to this memorandum, then, do you?
Well, yes, I agree with that in the sense in which it was used here. I agree with that. I believe it got really serious on the 21st or the 22nd of January. I believe, however, that it was serious at this time, and that's why I wrote the memorandum.
But this was all released to the press in March after the chronological list of charges had been released by the Army, right?
That's correct.
So that the public was advised that there was blackmail going on as of December 9th, at least. And that is still your opinion.
That there was
blackmail attempted on December 9th.
In the sense of extort, yes, I believe that.
So as far as you're concerned, the situation was serious prior to January 21st?
Yes, sir.
In the relations with the Army, I'm referring.
The situation, sir.
Yes, but I say that's with reference to
with
the
reference
Army.
With reference to the Army, yes.
Now, if you'll refer to page 4, that's memorandum 7, down along about the third paragraph.
Excuse me, sir.
Maybe it's not the same in... it's the same, but you have the same memorandum. Memorandum.
The third paragraph?
Third paragraph. As you know...
Yes, sir.
As you know, I have on many occasions been pretty curt with Dave about the prompt submission of memoranda. However, in this current situation, in view of the change of plans, I cannot criticize it. Well, now, what memos did he submit to you? Or what memoranda did he submit to you?
As I said, I don't recall any specific one that he submitted to me. That's one of the things I was curt with him about.
So far as you know, he's never submitted any memoranda to you?
So far as I know, he's never submitted any memoranda to me. No,
you see, as I read your sentence, and I'm just looking at it literally, I don't know what you had in mind. But as you know, I'm quoting you now, as you know, I have on many occasions been curt with Dave about the prompt submission of memoranda. Now, that statement would imply that he'd get it in, but he wasn't very prompt.
No, it might imply that.
Well, isn't that a reasonable implication?
That's a reasonable implication, but I believe that I wrote this having in mind that... I wish he would submit more memorandum, and I wish he would submit them promptly.
But all the time that you were staff director, starting in July, through this period at Fort Dix, you never received any memoranda from him, or a memorandum of any kind relating to his work, to your knowledge.
I don't recall any, although I may have.
The daily fireworks came at the very end. The Democratic Senator Symington had asked a series of questions, bringing out the fact that a number of employees could have had access to the committee files, and then went on to elicit testimony that committee employees had varying kinds of clearance for access to secret data. The explosion came after this question from Symington.
Now, Mr. Carr, under the present rules for access to files of this committee, if a former communist who hadn't really reformed, or a subversive, or any security risk on this committee staff that might get on it, decided to betray his country by revealing the contents of a secret FBI document which he had found in these files, based to a possible enemy, it would be a relatively simple matter, would it not, for him to do that based on the way these files are handled?
Well, sir, I don't agree with you. I don't know of any FBI secret documents that are contained in our files.
There are no purported secret documents to the FBI, confidential documents in the files?
No, sir, I don't know of any FBI documents in our files.
What would you say the 2.25-page document was?
Well, that was from the senator's office, sir. That was not
in the file.
That's correct, sir.
But if it was in the file, then it would be possible for somebody to get it under these rules, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chairman.
Please answer the question, then we're going to go to
the witness. Answer the question.
That's all right. Under personal privilege, you gave Mr. Symington the right to answer and ask one question. I do want to raise that point before we leave this afternoon.
Raise it briefly, then, because we have to adjourn to the vote.
Oh.
ahead.
I will raise it as briefly as I can, but may I say that Senator Simington has been here by innuendo trying to smear this staff of young men who have been working to dig out communists. He's talking about what might happen if there were subversive on the staff. I would like to ask him now, even though he's not under oath, whether he has any information at all of any kind to justify this attempted smear against these 14 young men who have done such an excellent job uncovering communists. If he has no information, then he should be honest enough to tell us. If he has information, he should take the stand and take the oath as these young men have been taking it. Now, may I ask you, Senator, do you have any information to indicate that there is anyone on my staff who is subversive, as you have indicated in your questioning?
Senator Simon, didn't answer the question, then we're going to have to recess for the vote.
I will answer that question this way, Senator McCarthy. In all the years that I have been in this government, based on the testimony that's been given before this committee under oath, I think the files of what you call my staff, my director, my chief of staff, have been the sloppiest and most dangerously handled files that I have ever known of since I've been in the government.
Mr. Chairman, now you can run away if you like, Stu. You can run away if you like. You have been here trying to smear the staff of this committee. The young men who have been working to uncover communists, you jump up and run away without answering the question. I have asked you a simple question. Do you have any evidence of any kind to indicate that there's any subversive amongst these young men? If not, you are leaving here this afternoon, leaving a smear upon the name of each and every one of them. You shouldn't do that, Mr. Symington. That's just dishonest. That's the thing that the Communist Party has been doing too long.
Apparently, every time anybody says anything against anybody working for Senator McCarthy, he is smearing them and is he accusing them of communism?
Just answer the question. Do you know of any subversive?
The best answer that I can give you.
Do you know of any?
Stand in recess until 10 o'clock.
The only answer you're going to get.
You won't answer whether you know of any subversive. Mr. Chairman, even though the chair is waving, I want to make this record. And Mr. Reporter, will you take this down? Mr. Symington, other members of the Democrat Party here have been intimating that they know of some subversive on the staff investigating communists. I have asked Mr. Symington point blank to tell us whether he knew of any such subversive. He runs away. He won't answer the question. May I say that that is the most dishonest, the most unfounded smear upon some of the most outstanding young men that I have ever seen work to uncover communists. And before this is over, the American people have a better picture of it. I guess we must go and vote now.
Now here again is my CBS radio colleague, Griffin Bancroft.
The hearings go on tomorrow with Carr back on the stand, and CBS Radio will again bring you recorded highlights at a slightly later time at 10:15 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow night. This is the eighth week of the hearings, and all concerned express the hope it will be the last. There is every indication the committee will be through with Carr tomorrow. Republican senators already seem to be running out of questions, and the Army Counsel Joseph Welch told this reporter he definitely will be through with Carr sometime tomorrow. Welch said after Carr is dismissed, he expected about one more day should finish the questioning of Senator McCarthy. Welch says that as of now, he has no further questions for McCarthy's chief counsel, Roy Cohn. This is Griffin Bancroft recording in Washington. This is the CBS Radio Network.